Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, December 7th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Tensions are rising in the ruling ZANU-PF party ahead of its crucial annual conference to be held in the resort town of Victoria Falls.
All the preparations are going on very well. All the committees have worked very assiduously on their assignments. And we're looking forward to the conference.
Zimbabwe and the International Fund for Agricultural Development today signed a debt rescheduling agreement that will result in IFAD resuming its financial support to the country.
And a former National Youth Service Director says the program was highly politicized, leading to its near demise. This and much more coming up, so stay tuned.
Tensions are rising in the ruling ZANU-PF party ahead of its crucial annual conference to be held in the resort town of Victoria Falls. The party has been thrown into a crisis as most provinces have voted to bring back the controversial women's quota system that might jeopardize one of the two vice presidents, Emmerson Mnangagwa's, chances of elevation to the presidential seat. Harare Province, Mashonaland East, Mashonaland West, Mashonaland Central and Bulawayo have all voted to support the quota system. Only Mnangagwa strongholds of Maswingo and Midlands are holding out. Midlands has counterpunched and is calling on President Robert Mugabe to dissolve the National Disciplinary Committee, accusing it of allegedly targeting Mnangagwa's allies. Another non-Mnangagwa ally, Chris Mutswangwa, is also on the ropes as the rival faction known as Generation 40 or G40 is calling for his expulsion for alleged corruption and dealing with foreign governments. Mnangagwa has hit back at the party political commissar, Xavier Kasukuere, accusing him of lacking Liberation War credentials to head the key portfolio he's holding. Despite all this nipping and trading of bulbs, party spokesman Simon Kayamoyo tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the party is ready for the conference.
All the preparations are going on very well. All the committees have worked very assiduously on their assignments, and we're looking forward to the conference.
And have you discussed the agenda?
Well, to start with, we must start with the theme of the conference, and of course it's consolidating people's power through Zuma set. Our focus is on economic recovery. Our focus is on Zuma set, which, as you know, has got four major clusters. That is food security, nutrition, social services, poverty, eradication, infrastructure and utilities, and of course, then value addition and beneficiation of our natural resources. So that is what we are going to be spending more time on, because we cannot spend time on things which really don't have a direct bearing on the quality of lives of the people.
And to be specific, this is not an elective Congress.
Certainly not. This is a conference. It's Congress which is elective, but this is a conference. And we don't elect the leadership at conference. In any case, we are aware that with the new constitution of the party is amended in December, it's only the president who is elected, whom we elected in December. And the Politburo and the vice presidents are appointed for members of the Central Committee, who are elected. Central Committee members are elected by their respective provinces. And so that is the position. We are not going for elections. Our constitution does not even have that. We are going for a conference, not a congress.
That was ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Zimbabwe and the International Fund for Agricultural Development today signed a debt rescheduling agreement that will result in IFAD resuming financial support for Zimbabwe by providing $55 million under the Smallholder Irrigation Revitalization Program next year. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports.
IFAD Regional Director for East and Southern Africa, Sanjata, who was in Harare to sign the deal, said the organization, which suspended projects in Zimbabwe over 23 million arrears, was re-engaging it in a new deal that has seen Zimbabwe pay 10% of the arrears and made an undertaking to pay the remainder over a five-year period. He said the program to be funded by IFAD will rehabilitate and develop new smallholder irrigation schemes covering 8,000 hectares and benefiting more than 20,000 households.
The government, we're expecting, and the beneficiaries to contribute about $5 million, and another co-financier still to be identified. We are working around that, another $10 million.
He said IFAD will provide more financial resources if Zimbabwe does not fall into arrears again. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa said, due to climate change, government efforts to develop agriculture must focus on irrigation.
We have no choice. This is now out of necessity, and we should plow and deploy more resources in this sector. So the assistance that we are going to get, the resources that we are expecting to obtain from IFAD, will be a major shot in the arm of the agricultural sector in this country, especially irrigation development.
Deputy Agriculture and Mechanization Minister Paddy Shanda said the agricultural sector continues to face many challenges, such as lack of adequate inputs and climate change. He said resources from IFAD should be used to address these issues and ensure food security, especially in rural areas.
The program will sustainably increase diversification of production, productivity and household incomes for smallholder farmers. This support is aligned to the Food and Nutrition Cluster, the ZIM Asset Economic Blueprint, and the 10-point plan for economic growth, whose fundamental pillar is the revitalization of the agriculture sector and the agro-processing value chain.
Tirarami Muyambo, an agricultural extension officer with a local non-governmental organization, said while he was not aware of the details of the IFAD program, irrigation was the best way to go, especially for the country's natural regions 4 and 5.
Issues of irrigation are critical in this country because you know that due to climate change, areas in Region 5, in Chipinge, where I have so much knowledge on, have been experiencing drought almost year in, year out. So it's a welcome development. I think it will change and help in rebuilding the redeveloping food security in Zimbabwe.
The IFAD program will have four components, namely rehabilitation and development of irrigation infrastructure, agricultural credit, institutional strengthening, and market access and business development. Government in the meantime is expected to establish a unit that would coordinate the implementation of the program. Chinamasa said the gesture by IFAD was an indication that the government's re-engagement effort with the international community was paying off, and government would do all it can to achieve full admission into the community of nations. Zimbabwe requires long-term financing to reboot its economy, but is constrained by external debts which have blocked the flow of international capital into the country. IFAD has been operating in Zimbabwe since 1980 and cancelled its support to the country in 2006 after it defaulted on its arrears. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The former head of Zimbabwe's National Youth Service says the program was mired in controversy as it was highly politicized when it was mooted in the year 2001. Reason Wafawarova says the program that was supposed to be a gateway to national economic and social development for young people took a turn at its implementation stage, stirring controversy over its politicization and alleged violation of rights for recruits. He tells Studio 7 star Tenda Gumbo about how they conducted the program.
The Ministry of Local Government, the Civil Protection Unit, CPU, so they had their staff to come train things like fire handling, handling floods, and all those kind of earthquakes and all those kind of basic training, voluntary work that should we have a flood in the country, how do you help people and so on, should we have a fire outbreak, how do you help. So that is, the army also came in with things like drills. They were responsible for discipline, and then they would, just like in any other country, the army takes care of the drills, the marches, and all the disciplinary part of it. So they were there. The Minister of Health have a lot of hygiene issues that they were saying these people could be used as volunteers to teach basic hygiene. So we had all those people coming to the camps to teach the kids, these are the stakeholders who came in. Then there was obviously the national orientation program that was happening, which is basically where you're teaching the history of the country, the history of the armed struggle, where we came from, and so on and so on. And there were stakeholders, people that were teaching at the universities, people that were teaching in tertiary institutions, consultants that were in the city.
And now, owing to that explanation of the objective of the program itself, of course, there was some controversy over the politicization of the program, where some were saying that became a arm of ZANU-PF. Can you talk about that and, you know, what really happened?
What happened was, you have a national program on one hand, and you obviously at the initial stages of it, there's so many challenges and so on. So vision has to be shared, and there has to be commonality with any vision. So what then happened was, there are people that came to the program way after the concept paper and the initial stages of the program, and they had the ideas, their own ideas, in terms of what they thought the program was. So there was that element within the program where some people began to sloganeer, for example, to try and start doing slogans with the trainees.
That was Rizin Wafawarova, former head of the National Youth Service, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
The MDC formation of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai says it has written to the Office of the President and Cabinet to register its displeasure at Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko's continued stay at the Rainbow Towers Hotel at the expense of poor Zimbabweans. MDCT spokesman Obed Gutu says their calculations show that the Vice President has so far spent over $200,000 since he moved into the Rainbow Towers executive wing in December last year following his appointment. The Vice President's family reportedly turned down the state's offer for accommodation in Harare. Last week, police in Harare arrested 5 activists for demonstrating against Mr. Mpoko's continued stay at the 5-star hotel at the expense of the taxpayers. Mr. Gutu tells Studio 7 they hope the president's office will see sense in their call and save the money to buy food for struggling Zimbabweans.
Zisco steel workers say they are still waiting for management to inform them about proposed retrenchments announced by the government last week. Workers Council Chairperson Benedict Moyo says they are still waiting to hear from management and government almost a week after Minister Patrick Chinamansa announced that the 1,400 workers will be retrenched starting last Tuesday. He tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube it's not yet certain how the management will handle the issue.
At the moment, we have not been told anything officially, and as such, it is difficult for us to say exactly what is happening, besides saying everything is normal to us. And until we are called by our management to be given a new position, which the minister pronounced, we are going to have to stay put, both right now as I speak. We have just knocked off from work, and everything is normal. We've been doing business as normal. We are going to wait until we are told by our management to say this is the new dispensation.
So now we are also informed that about 75% of employees at Zisco Steel were actually told to go home in October and come back in January on unpaid leave. How true is that?
Those are measures that are taken in order to avoid retrenchment. So our management, in their wisdom, which we fully understood and agreed with, our management came with an idea saying, gentlemen, how about if we said people should go on unpaid instead of accumulating or accruing backlog, we are not paying. Because at the end of the day, the company really is obliged proposal to us. We jumped onto it and took it.
That was Benedict Moyo, Zisco Steel Workers Council Chairperson, speaking with Studio 7 from Redcliffe, Midlands Province.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
a closer look at medical male circumcision.
And Mutare Rovers promoted to Division 1. Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Syria said today airstrikes by the U.S.-led coalition killed at least 3 Syrian soldiers and wounded 13 others at a military camp in Deir Ezzor province. But the coalition denied the allegation, saying it did not hit any targets in the area.
Today is the 74th anniversary of the Japanese attack on the U.S. Navy base at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. In 1941, U.S. President Franklin Roosevelt declared the December 7 attack as a date which will live in infamy, with the U.S. declaring war on Japan a day later and entering World War II.
And election officials in Venezuela say the opposition has won control of the legislature, delivering a stunning defeat to the ruling Socialist Party. Authorities say the opposition, with some districts yet to be counted, has won 99 of the 167 seats in the National Assembly.
Zimbabwe is one of the countries hardest hit by the AIDS epidemic. For the past couple of years, the government has been urging men to get circumcised, a procedure that lowers the risk of getting infected with the HIV virus. Now, officials are pushing the newly introduced ring method that makes the procedure easier. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from the rural district of Shurugwi, Midlands Province.
These men have just been circumcised using the ring method. They watch a football match as others undergo the procedure in a nearby tent. The technique involves inserting a plastic ring inside the foreskin. A rubber ring is placed on the outside. The ring blocks the blood flow to the foreskin, and in a few days, both the ring and the foreskin can be removed. In 2009, the government set the target to have 1.3 million men circumcised by 2017 to slow the spread of HIV. Zimbabwe was falling short of this target with the surgical method, according to Mauven Nyamana, the chief medical officer in Shurugwi Rural District. He says the ring method introduced this year has made a big difference.
We are seeing that a lot of particular population were not keen on coming for circumcision, especially the young adults and the older men ranging from 18 to around 29 are now willing to come because of this method, which saves time. They just want to come in and go with no injections, with less hassles, and continue with their daily business as usual.
He says the ring method is less painful and less expensive. An 18-year-old man heads out to play football after his procedure. He says with the ring method, you can do all your usual chores. He says some people like me were afraid of surgical circumcision, but there's nothing to be afraid of with the ring method. Nothing has changed since I got the ring on me. Zimbabwe rolled out the ring method with the funding from the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, and the Population Services International, PSI. The World Health Organization says there's compelling evidence that male circumcision reduces the risk of HIV infection in men by approximately 60%. However, the UN body specifies that male circumcision only reduces, not eliminates, the risk. It says people should still use protection, practice abstinence, and avoid multiple sex partners. That is the same message Zimbabwean health officials preach to men here before they line up to be circumcised. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Shurugwe, Zimbabwe.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry congratulated the people of Burkina Faso on the election of their first new president in nearly 30 years. Burkina Faso's commitment to a peaceful and transparent election is a model to be emulated, he said. Nearly 3 million voters turned out for the close elections, choosing a new parliament and Roch-Marc Christian Kabore, a former prime minister, as president. The long-awaited vote took place despite the many challenges Burkina Faso has faced since 2014. Political conditions have been unsettled in the West African country since former president Blaise Compaoré was forced from office last October amid protests over his plans to cling to power after nearly 3 decades as president by changing the constitution to run for a third term. The country's interim government was unseated by a short-lived military putsch in September. In October, elections were delayed. Over the past 2 years, the Burkinabe people have repeatedly demonstrated their strong commitment to democracy in the face of adversity and shown that legitimate leadership requires public accountability, said Secretary Kerry. The United States looks forward to working with the government and people of Burkina Faso to advance our strong partnership and to continue to strengthen Burkina Faso's governance, security, and economic institutions.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And in sports news, Chris, the people like me who've got roots in Manicaland are really happy because the unusually quiet and laid-back city of Mutare has been lit up following the promotion of Mutare City Rovers from the Eastern Region's Division 1 into the top-flight Castle Premier Soccer League, or PSL, next soccer season. The team supporters celebrated the club's 2-0 victory over Rua United yesterday, which resulted in its eventual promotion. And thanks also to the faltering of Mashingo United, who were held to a goalless draw by Mutoko Traders when they needed nothing short of an outright victory. Our correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has the story.
The Eastern Border City was set alight with the wild celebrations from morning till evening as their supporters were in cloud nine celebrating the team's promotion, which ensures the city remains with a PSL club following the demotion of Amiside Buffaloes Football Club to Division 1. Mutare resident, teacher and Mutare City Rovers fan, Webster Sarichera, says he is happy about the promotion of his favorite team.
Yes, Magusha, well done. Magusha, you have done Manicaland proud, especially Mutare, the people of Manicaland. The whole of you, we support you, we rally you, rally before you, behind you. We are proud of you. Makorokoto, Magusha, well done.
Another team supporter, Tichana Juwao and Mutare resident, says Mutare residents should rally behind the team for its continued stay in the top flight league.
I think it's good for the Mutarians. Because since the Buffalo didn't make it this time, I think it's to keep the people of Mutare happy. And we wish also that maybe it will survive for this coming up season since it made it.
Kevin Masingita, a resident of Sakuva in Mutare, who stays close to Sakuva Stadium, where Mutare City Rovers will be using as home ground, adds There is no better Christmas present than the promotion of the local teams popularly known as Magusha.
It's a blessing for the people of Mutare, considering that Buffaloes were demoted recently. So we are happy to have another Premier League in Mutare. That's wonderful.
Regai Tsunga, a soccer analyst and Mutare resident, says there has been relief as the team has eventually been promoted after three attempts. He says the relegation of Buffaloes demoralized some local football fans.
Well, naturally, we are excited as citizens of Mutare. You know, the relegation of Buffaloes, it really left us dejected to the extreme in terms of sport, especially soccer. Now Mutare is back in the Premiership through, you know, Mutare City Rovers. And we are naturally excited, and we wish them well and all the best, you know, in the Premiership.
The team's organizing secretary, Isdo Bingura, promises fireworks come the next soccer season.
We will promise Mutare City Rovers fantastic football for the 2016 soccer season, Premiership season. It has been a hard way. We've encountered so many problems for us to achieve this, but finally it has come out. And I want to assure the people of Mutare that they are going to watch tic-tac football as from next season. Thank you.
According to Mutare City Rovers coach Kennedy Kachara, their promotion into top flight soccer is not a fluke.
Yeah, come next season, there's a lot of soccer. We are going to impress so much.
One headache the team faces is of getting funding to ensure it fulfills its PSL commitments, given the dire financial situation the Mutare City Council is facing. Nonetheless, celebrations continue in Mutare to mark their entry into top flight football. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Amoyo.
Maganaga Jesu muno shamisa
Unaita minana ngeziratitsu
Una maganaga Jesu muno shamisa
Unaita minana ngeziratitsu
Zvino tokudana Jesu muno shamisa
Unaita minana ngeziratitsu
Zvino tokudana Jesu muno shamisa
Unaita minana ngeziratitsu
Saka tokutenda Jesu muno shamisa
Unaita minana ngeziratitsu
Saka tokutenda Jesu muno shamisa
Unaita minana ngeziratitsu
The music of Abati wa Jehovah, Makanaka Jesu Muno Shamisa, going out to you from Studio 7 here at the Voice of America.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will lead discussions on the election of Philip Tiangwa as Zifa president.
It will be an explosive discussion, so please text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. Chris, we recap today's top stories.
Yes, and tensions are rising in the ruling ZANU-PF party ahead of its crucial annual conference to be held in the resort town of Victoria Falls.
And a former National Youth Service director says the program was highly politicized, leading to its near demise.
That's our broadcast this evening. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.